Over the last few weeks, we have been really focusing on the Gospels, about what Jesus taught about what was happening when he was dying on the cross. Of course, there is also the whole New Testament, which in many ways also explores these themes. And we're just going to spend a few minutes now reflecting briefly on one aspect of that. And again, like we have in the previous times, we will end up referring back to the Old Testament as well. Because Jesus, when he died, he was in Jerusalem, crucified in the shadow of a building that dominated the city. It was the building that was bigger than everything else. It was the building that was on the highest point of the city. And that was, of course, the temple. And it was Passover time, a major religious festival where thousands of people were streaming into the city from all over and lots of animals were sacrificed. And it was a very big deal. And this whole sacrificial system had been instituted by God. And it wasn't just like this was a mistake that God had, we did this sacrificial system, it didn't quite work, and so we now have to do something else, we have to do Jesus. No, it was deliberately set up by God that way. And in Hebrews chapters 8 to 10, and you'll be glad to know I'm not going to be reading all of that chapter, all those chapters this morning, it looks at the death of Jesus through the frame of the sacrificial system, trying to help us understand what was going on at Good Friday through the system of sacrifices that had been set up in the Old Testament. And in chapter 9, it refers to both the establishment of a new covenant that we looked at last time from Jeremiah 31, but it also makes reference to the Day of Atonement. And so I thought we would go back to the Old Testament and look at the Day of the Atonement. And it's all recorded about the procedures that had to happen for the Day of Atonement in Leviticus chapter 16. And Leviticus is probably one of the least read books in the Old Testament from Christians. I guess there might be some of the minor prophets that are sort of, you know, those little ones that are somewhere just before the end of the Old Testament that you just sort of flip over by accident. But, you know, when people start reading through the Bible, they'll go through Genesis, Exodus, and they'll sort of get to Leviticus and they'll either fast forward over it or they'll stop or do something. But Leviticus is all about explaining how the Israelites, or teaching the Israelites, how they could live safely with God in their very presence. At the end of the book of Exodus, they'd built the tabernacle and God's glory had filled the tabernacle. And Leviticus says, well, now that you've got God's presence really close to you, this is what you need to do to stay safe. And in fact, you can only come into the centre part of the temple, where the place closest to God, where the Ark of the Covenant was, under very strict circumstances. And it says this in the beginning of chapter 16. The Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron who died when they approached the Lord. The Lord said to Moses, tell your brother Aaron that he is not to come whenever he chooses into the most holy place, behind the curtain in front of the atonement cover on the ark, or else he will die. For I will appear in the cloud over the atonement cover. We often have this view, we think about sins often in terms of fines. You know, and often people say, well, it's like, you sin, but what you've got a fine that you owe, but God's paid your fine. But in this chapter, In the chapter on the Day of Atonement, it actually describes sin in a way that is actually common throughout the scriptures, and that is uncleanness. And it's binary. You're either clean or unclean. It doesn't matter whether you've done lots of bad things to make you unclean or only minor things to make you unclean. You're either clean or unclean. And I guess we have a great appreciation of that these days, because we now know you either have COVID or you don't have COVID. Now, you might have different seriousness in the offer, but you either have COVID and you don't have COVID. If you have COVID, there's lots of procedures that then are required to be taken. And if you read through Leviticus chapter 16, and I encourage you to do that, you might think, I've seen this before. Because it describes what Aaron had to do before he was going to go and offer the sacrifice of the Day of Atonement. It says this in verse 4, he says, he must bathe himself with water before he puts on the special clothes. And then he goes and does all the sacrificing things, and then it says later on in the chapter, then he takes off the special clothes and has another wash. It sounds to me like personal protective equipment going on and off. And that's exactly what it is, because sin is contagious and it is deadly. And so God set up this model, this pattern, this picture. And it says in Hebrews chapters 8 to 10 that all of this sacrificial system was a model of what was actually happening in heaven. It's a bit like if you're going to go on a journey to Sydney and you want to know what Sydney's like, well, you look at a postcard. And you see a postcard of the Opera House, and you see a postcard of the Harbour Bridge and all those sorts of things. That's like a model of the city to which you hope to go. And so there is this process of, if you want to get really close to God, then you need to do these things, otherwise you'll die. Because your sin and rebellion is uncleanness. And a sacrifice needs to be made for you. And it says this at the end of chapter 16. This is to be a lasting ordinance for you. On the 10th day of the 7th month, you must deny yourselves and not do any work, whether native-born or foreigner residing among you. Because on this day, atonement will be made for you to cleanse you. And so here the Israelites were learning that cleansing was not something they could do for themselves. It wasn't by their own actions that they were cleansed. It was by the sacrifice of an animal that they were cleansed. So every year they would do this Day of Atonement, you see, and it would explain and teach them that, yes, sin is really serious. If you want to get into the close presence of God, sin is a problem. It's infectious, it's deadly, and it's contagious. You need to deal with it very, very carefully. You can't deal with it yourself. There needs to be sacrifices made on your behalf to do that. And over in Hebrews, it talks about them being a model that points to the ultimate fulfillment. Chapter 9, verse 11 in Hebrews. But when Christ came as a high priest of the good things that are now already here, he went through the greater and more perfect tabernacle. The actual tabernacle, if you like, of which the temple and the earthly tabernacle were a model. That is not made with human hands. That is to say, is not part of this creation. He did not enter by means of the blood of goats and calves, but he entered the most holy place once for all by his own blood, thus obtaining eternal redemption. The blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer sprinkled on those who are ceremonially unclean sanctify them so they are outwardly clean. The model, with the details in Leviticus 16 and other places, it made people ceremonially clean, but it was only an outward thing because the sacrifice of bulls and goats never actually dealt with it deep enough. Sprinkle on those who are ceremonially unclean, sanctify them so that they are outwardly clean. how much more then will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself unblemished to God, cleanse our consciences from acts that lead to death? It's like another phrase we've come up very familiar with in the last 12 months. And that's the phrase of a deep clean. You know, there's been someone that's been infected in a workplace, or there's been some, you know, outbreak somewhere, and they send in masses of other people to do a deep clean, to get rid of every skerrick and every possible trace of infection. And if you like, that points a bit to what happened with Jesus at the cross. You see, the externalities of animal sacrifices are pointers towards the deep reality that needs to happen. The external cleansing that that was dealt with through the sacrifices pointed to the deeper reality of the deep cleansing that we actually need. Not just externally, but from deep inside in our consciences. And the Day of Atonement every year was a reminder of that. I don't know whether you've ever driven to Sydney from Melbourne, but when you leave Melbourne, there's a big sign that says Sydney, 853 kilometres. Now, the sign isn't Sydney, but it's telling you that there is a Sydney and it's some distance away. And then if you drive along, and particularly when you get closer, there'll be little signs that usually just have an S, 100, then an S, 90. It's telling you that there's 90 kilometres to the Sydney Central Post Office. And then you see another S a bit later on, S80. And it was like the Day of Atonement coming around year after year after year. Yes, a reminder, a pointing to the reality. But then when you're driving to Sydney, one day you actually get there and you're standing underneath the Sydney Harbour Bridge and looking at the Opera House. You no longer need the postcard. You no longer need the signs, because you've arrived at the reality. And on Good Friday, we no longer need the model of the Old Testament sacrifices. We no longer need the repeated ceremonies year after year, because we've arrived at the reality. And you can read in the Hebrews a bit more. It talks about how the blood of the sacrifice, it's not so much the blood. The blood is representative of the life of the animal. So the blood of Christ is representative of his life, him giving his life for our life. And it's interesting, we talked about the fact that the way Jesus died was significant of a way of making a covenant. And we don't have many examples of covenant in contemporary life today, but one of the ones that we do have is the idea of marriage. It's an unbreakable agreement that two people make together. It's a marriage covenant. But the other covenants that we have, that some of us really benefit from, are things called wills. Your last will and testament. And even me mentioning it, you're probably thinking, I need to update mine. But the thing about a will is that when you die, somebody else gets a benefit. And the writer to the Hebrews says exactly that in chapter 9, verse 16. In the case of a will, it is necessary to prove the death of the one who made it, because a will is in force only when somebody has died. It never takes effect while the one who made it is living. And so another way that we can look at the crucifixion and the death of Jesus is that his will, his inheritance, his cleansing, his forgiveness comes into effect because he died. This new covenant that guarantees forgiveness, that guarantees not just forgiveness for the penalty, but cleansing from the uncleanness. And when we recall that sin is not just a list of wrongs, but it's a sense of it's an experience of uncleanness. We can then read the Gospels in fresh light. At the beginning of Mark's Gospel, Jesus stands up to start his public ministry, and in a synagogue, and a person who is demon possessed cries out, and Jesus casts the demon out and delivers that person from that evil. And then a bit later, a leper comes up to him. A person who had to go around yelling out, unclean, unclean, who was banished and couldn't live in the normal villages because he had an infectious disease that was incurable at the time. And he comes to Jesus and says, if you are willing, you can make me clean. And the Jewish understanding at the time was that things like diseases were actually infectious. If you touched the infectious person, you probably got the disease. But other ritual uncleanness was contagious like that. If you touched a dead body, you became unclean. If you, the whole bunch of different things that you did that were, that showed that uncleanness was contagious and it was powerful. But here Jesus says, pointing to the fact that within him he had the power to deal with our uncleanness, he says, I am willing, and reached out and touched the leper. He then couldn't go back into the villages for some time because he, by his very action of touching the leper, made him ritually unclean. And people would have feared that he was now contagious with leprosy. But the power within Jesus was stronger than the uncleanness in the leper, and the leper became whole. And the power in Jesus when he dies on the cross is stronger than our uncleanness. And when we throw ourselves on God and trust him, we find that he makes us clean and cleanses the deepest parts of us, our consciences. And so we are now going to come to, I'm going to invite Celia to come up, and she's going to read for us an account of the crucifixion. And I encourage you maybe even just to close your eyes. And as Celia reads through it and describes the situation going on, place yourself there. Keep in mind the multifaceted ways that God is dealing with our broken condition, defeating evil, obtaining forgiveness, cleansing us. Keep in mind all of these multifaceted ways that what's happening on the cross is significant. And I've chosen the story to be read from Luke's Gospel, because it's the one that includes the interactions with the two people crucified with Jesus. One of them doesn't really get it, but the other one does. And he's a model for us, recognising that we deserved to be in places of punishment and Jesus didn't. So you might like to close your eyes, or whichever way will help you focus as Celia reads this. Thank you, Celia.
As the soldiers led him away, they seized Simon from Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country, and put the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus. A large number of people followed him, including women who mourned and wailed for him. Jesus turned and said to them, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your children. For the time will come when you will say, 'Blessed are the childless women, the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if people do these things when the tree is green, What will happen when it is dry? Two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. When they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him there along with the criminals, one on his right, the other on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is God's Messiah, the chosen one." The soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and said, "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." There was a written notice above him which read, "This is the King of the Jews." One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him, "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But the other criminal rebuked him. "Don't you fear God," he said, "since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus answered him, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." It was now about noon, and the darkness came over the whole land until 3 PM, for the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." When he had said this, he breathed his last.
In Hebrews 10, it says, "Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place," the place where the high priest could only the high priest could go, and he could only go once a year, and only after he'd done an elaborate ritual. "Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain, that is his body, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God." The curtain has been torn. Access to the most holy place is now freely available. So let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience, and having our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. We have spoken about our sin this morning, but you and I also will often recognise, just like the second criminal on the cross next to Jesus, that their life is broken. A series of circumstances, a series of decisions that you and others have made, or maybe that no one's made, and just things have just happened, and you feel like your life is broken. And in the death and resurrection of Jesus, God offers us new life. And so we're going to sing this song, "Broken Vessels, Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound." You take our weakness, all these pieces broken and scattered. So I invite you to stand with me, and let's sing this, a the song of bringing ourselves as we are in all our brokenness to God, ready to receive His amazing grace.